Welcome to the Organic Content Marketing Podcast with your host, Katie Toby Grinley. I'm here to share what I've learned about content, marketing, building a community from running my multiple businesses. So get ready for tips, trainings, and mindset shifts so you can create not only epic content, but an incredible business. Hello, welcome back to another episode. Today I'm joined by Natalie Brooks, who is the founder of Dyslexia in Adults. Natalie teaches adults how to stop dyslexia, ruin their careers, and how to manage it successfully. Hello, Natalie.
Hello, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
Oh, I'm so excited to have you here. I feel like you have so much wisdom when it comes to running a business with dyslexia and just dyslexia in general. And I'm really excited because we're going to be talking about actually how to manage your business if you have dyslexia, but really leaning into those strengths, which I know you talk about so much, like on your social media channels. But I'd really love to just kind of start from the very beginning, if it's okay with you, and like why you decided to start your business in the first place.
Yeah, I think for me, dyslexia in adults came from this really big drive and desire that I have to reach my potential and to feel smart, feel capable, feel like I'm doing a good job. And when I was younger, because I've been running dyslexia in adults for about 4 years now, I felt like I was playing small and I was having to constantly job hop with dyslexia. And, you know, it was like whack-a-mole. Like I would leave one job for one problem and then like another one would pop up. And it was this constant battle of like, how do I manage this? How do I figure this out? What do I do? You know, I want to earn a good wage and have a good career, but also this feels like this constant thing that is, you know, stalking me and causing me so many issues that I want to understand how to manage it more successfully. And so that's the drive that created Dyslexia in Adults. You know, I really wanted to figure out for myself how to manage this challenge and how to figure it out. It ended up kind of spiraling out of becoming a bigger thing than I ever expected it to be. Now we have over 100,000 followers and we help other people try with those same challenges that I once faced of how to manage your dyslexia effectively so that you can really have a successful career, figure out what you're good at, you know, leave work on time and not have to work all those extra hours, not feel scared about going for the next promotion or being involved in that meeting or whatever it is, because you have the systems that work for you.
Yeah, definitely. And I love that. I actually found you by accident on Instagram because I was actually looking for resources to help me more as an adult who has dyslexia, because I was finding that there were so many amazing resources for children. And it was kind of like almost like, well, once you leave school or education, that's it. Like, you know, you're supposed to be able to like just handle it on your own, kind of like, well, you know, that's it. Like, why do you need help and support now?
Well, exactly. And I think the thing that, you know, the things that we talk about on the Instagram account is positioned mostly for people in corporate jobs, but actually behind the scenes, I'm working with a lot of entrepreneurs because we're told this narrative as neurodiverse people that, okay, you just need to, you know, you just need to start your own business and you'll be fine. You know, you just need to do things differently and you'll be fine. You just need to kind of get out of education and you'll be fine. And it's like, it's not actually as simple as that. And many business owners are struggling with the same things, but because they don't have consequences in quite the same way, because there's not a boss kind of standing over their shoulder, that, you know, they're still struggling, but there's different types of consequences. It's impacting their income. It's impacting, you know, how they feel about themselves. It's impacting how they feel at the end of the day. It's impacting how much they can get done in the day. You know, there's still so many impacts from neurodiversity when you have your own business. And I hate this narrative of like, oh, well, you know, you just start your own business and you'll be fine. And I'm like, but it couldn't be further from the case.
Yeah, I agree. So a bit like you, Natalie, I did a lot of job hopping, leaving different jobs for different reasons, never really actually, I thought it was all about me. I thought it was all about like my self-worth, my self-belief. Well, actually, like a lot of that was down to my dyslexia because I didn't have confidence or the right support. So yeah, that's kind of why I was like, well, I'll just start my own business. And like, I honestly thought that like all of those problems would go away. But actually, when we start our own businesses, yeah, we, like you said, we have like a different set of problems, a different set of issues. When you're working with, you know, people who run their own businesses, entrepreneurs, what would you say are the things that people struggle with the most? Like, is there like a, you know, like a top five or something like that?
And I think, you know, just to say, there are so many things that neurodiverse people are good at that supports having your own business. So I think it's great that we are encouraged to have our own businesses, and you know, that's where so many of us end up really thriving, and that's wonderful. I'm not saying it's not a good career path for us, but I hate this narrative of like, you'll be fine. It's like, no, the problems just evolve. They're different. They're not the same. Gosh, I mean, there's so many challenges that we still have as neurodiverse people when we have our own business. I think time management and managing priorities and tasks and workload becomes even more stressful. Again, you don't have the consequences in terms of like a review where you're going to be told off, but often, you know, we work so much harder when you have your own business. And often you feel so disappointed in yourself at the end of the week of what you've been able to achieve and what you've been able to do. And the consequences at the end of the day are almost more severe because they're hitting your bottom line of exactly how much you're able to get through, what you're able to do. So many of my clients come to me with like managing all the stuff they have going on, and also shiny object syndrome. You know, ideas are the currency of neurodiverse people. So picking up, getting excited by like a shiny business idea, and then finding it really hard to implement that, follow that through, keep that going. Missing opportunities because you haven't replied to an email is something I hit all the time. So I think that, you know, goal-directed persistence of, you know, I'm working on this particular project and seeing it all the way through, whether or not that's time management, prioritization, procrastinating, figuring out how long things are going to take, is one element that I speak to a lot of neurodiverse people about who have their own businesses. And then so the second one that I think I see a lot of people struggling with is the difficulty of delegating. Now, like, we're told a lot that dyslexic people are great delegators. And yes, some of us are, but some of us actually aren't. There's a lot of shame and embarrassment and frustration around the things that we struggle with. And we're very determined people. And so if there's something that we're not instantly clicking with, sometimes we'll delegate it and that's great. And then sometimes it's like pig-headed stubbornness of like, I will figure this out. I will do this. I know I just need to work a bit harder, do a bit better. And they keep going at the same problem over and over and over and over again. And instead of being like, you know what, if I delegated it to someone else, or if I did it in a more neurodiverse friendly way, or I approached it differently, I might get more success. But because there's a lot of shame around not being able to do things, and particularly when you're the head of a company, you know, you want to inspire people, and admitting that you're struggling sometimes can feel really, really hard. And so I often see a lot of entrepreneurs doing things the hard way with just pig-headed hours of stubborn work. And often it's a little bit of like reviewing, you know, how should the team work? How do you delegate as a neurodiverse person? Because when we have these really exciting ideas, we want to follow them through. And we're like, okay, you know, I can picture how it looks and I want to be involved in it because I want to picture it and I can see what it's going to be. But actually, you know, maybe you lead the project and someone else implements it, or maybe you half work on it and someone else supports you, or there's lots of different ways. And one of the things that I like to recommend to people is like idea sessions, where you kind of, maybe you go, you have an idea and then you're going to put together a report or a presentation or whatever it is. And, you know, this is entrepreneurs or for people in companies. And I often recommend just grabbing a half an hour meeting to talk through, like, what do you want to talk about? What do you want to present? What are your ideas? Breaking those thoughts down. So instead of it's taking you 3 hours of like fiddling around with this presentation, 30 minutes of getting your thoughts together, and then you're in the zone, because getting into the zone of a project is a really important part for neurodiversity. Then you're in the zone of working and you can actually get started and do the work really effectively, and you're not procrastinating. And then maybe you send it to someone the next day and they proofread it and they make sure it's correct. And that's the kind of thing. It sounds really obvious, it sounds really simple, but I guarantee there will be listeners who are like, yeah, it just takes me 3 days and I just stubbornly work at it. And like, you know, what opportunity cost is that having for them? So if I had to pick two, it'd be workload management and learning how to do things differently, because we've just internalized so much trying to be normal as dyslexic people that often, even as entrepreneurs, we're still doing things the hard way, the long way around, even though we don't have to.
Yeah, I totally agree with that point. We do think that we have to do things in a certain way because, you know, that's either what we were taught or someone else is teaching it, or it's just the way it is. And I feel like that's something I'm so passionate about, is actually doing things in a way that feel right for you, whether that looks like, you know, someone else's way of doing it, or if it's a completely unique way to you. I think you've just got to really work out how you do things and what feels right for you.
Yeah, exactly. And often it's a lot of common sense, but it's exactly like you said at the beginning, so many neurodiverse people are struggling with confidence. And because we're so frustrated and embarrassed or uncomfortable with the reality of how things are going, we try and keep our cards close to our chest and we try and kind of keep things to ourselves. And so that's when people end up doing it the long way around, and, you know, making life harder for themselves. So a lot of the time it's quite similar, the things that you're working an entrepreneur and, you know, someone in a corporate environment. The nice thing about entrepreneurs is that they can actually implement the slightly more like exciting end of the scale of opportunities. You know, you can say, well, why don't you do things like this? And instead of the response being like, oh, I just don't know if my team will, you know, it's like, no, just, you know, just do it. It's fine. So that's, I think, the reality of it is a lot of the same stuff, but the exciting thing is we can really implement it quickly and make changes really fast. So that's really exciting.
Yeah, I love that. I love that, you know, there's no like hoops to jump through. It's not got to get signed off by anyone. Like, it's us, we're signing it off. We get to decide. Yeah, actually, this is going to save me a lot of time, or actually, this is going to really help, you know, me work with my brain, or, you know, help me get the best out of myself. So let's just change it. And it can be like, from that point forward, not, yeah, well, let's see what the team say, let's see what, you know, whoever. Exactly. Yeah,
that's the really exciting thing about entrepreneurs, is that we can delegate things and we can change the way systems are approached to make things easier for us. And, you know, it doesn't have to go through anyone or get signed off by anything. And that means that we get to play further to our strengths and we get to focus on the stuff that we are good at, and, you know, focus on those ideas and use them as our currency. And we can kind of step back a little bit from the challenges of the implementation and find other ways of working. So yeah, that's what I really enjoy about it, is it's a place where you can really see the change so quickly.
Yeah, I love that. So let's talk a little bit more then about how we can lean into our strengths within our businesses.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, obviously there's a lot of strengths that come with dyslexia. And so figuring out exactly what they look like for you is really important, because you need to understand what it is that you're trying to unlock, like what it is that you want to use and see and kind of value. And, you know, obviously the one that everyone knows is creativity, but actually it's so much deeper than that. And, you know, there's many dyslexic people who are incredibly creative and incredibly capable. I just happened not to be them. I just didn't get that bone when, you know, whoever upstairs was kind of pouring out the options for dyslexia, they were like, yep, trouble with spelling, trouble with instructions, difficulty with like processing written information, you know, processing time is slower. They poured it all of that in. And then, you know, when it came to the strengths, they were like, creativity, oh, we're out this day. We're back on the shelf. And you know, I used to really struggle with that a lot as a dyslexic person. I used to be like, well, if I'm not creative, what do I have? You know, what's left?
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't come naturally to me. And I used to feel really embarrassed about that. But actually, there's so much more to it.
Yeah, I feel like I'm very creative, but I feel like someone played a cruel trick on me as well, Natalie, because like for me, the frustration is like I cannot draw anything. And like I have all these pictures in my mind and like I want to be able to get them down on paper, and like the best I can do is like a stick person.
I know. So
I just feel like it's so cruel.
Yeah, I know. I feel the same. So, you know, for the fellow non-creative, you know, depending on what your definition of creativity is.
Yeah.
Some of the things that I see a lot in entrepreneurs is we're great at connecting people. You know, we really build relationships and build connections and trust, and we're very good at persuading people by the way that we engage with things and the way that we connect with people. And that often is about explaining complex ideas in simple and easy to understand formulas that builds a lot of trust and a lot of like understanding and engagement. But also alongside that, we're also very engaging in the fact that we tell stories and we use pictures and analogies and examples that help people feel connected to what we're talking about and feel connected with our ideas, and they listen for longer and they're likely to be more persuaded. So that for me, you know, there's creativity in the way that you do that.
Yeah.
But it's not the obvious phrase when we think of creativity. So, you know, your ability to build connections and connect with people, I think, is a huge strength that so many entrepreneurs who are dyslexic are relying on. So they're one of the ones that I really love to help people unlock. And one of the things when I talk about dyslexic strengths is, as a business, we've made a hard and fast pledge that we will never call dyslexia a superpower. We don't believe that it's a helpful phrase. Most people don't connect with it. It irritates a lot of people. It alienates a lot of people. That's our personal perspective. You'll never hear me calling dyslexia a superpower. But when we're talking about the strengths, they're things that we're naturally good at and capable of. And they're things that come easily and quickly to us. Now that to me is what the strengths are. But I think it's really important to remember that just because things are naturally come easy to us and we can do kind of quickly and they don't feel particularly difficult for us to do, doesn't mean that they can't be further unlocked. Doesn't mean that there isn't more potential that we can work on. And the example I love to use to really bring that to life is Michael Phelps, the really famous American swimmer. He's like supposed to be like born to be a swimmer. Like he's double jointed, he's got like webbed feet, or you know, all these.
Yeah, his feet are huge, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, he's like this huge individual and he was just born to be a swimmer.
Yeah.
But do you think that he's never done practice sessions in the gym? Do you think he doesn't care about his diet? Do you think he doesn't, you know, have a coach to improve how he's able to like swim better? Until I know really a lot about swimming, this analogy like falls apart the second I start talking about the specific swimming. But the point comes across that, yes, there's things that we're good at, but that doesn't mean we can't turn up the dial on them, that doesn't mean that we can't make them brighter and sharper and better. And so when I talk about understanding exactly what those strengths are and seeing their value, it's incredibly important in unlocking and, you know, really making those strengths stronger. And, you know, whenever people ask me why we don't call dyslexia a superpower, I always say, well, if Michael Phelps never got in the pool, he wouldn't see being double jointed and having webbed feet as a strength. He'd be like, yeah, whatever, like, it's irrelevant.
Yeah.
Because he worked on it, acknowledged it, unlocked it. He's like, this is the best thing since sliced bread. And that's why some people see dyslexia as a superpower, and some people are like, are you having a laugh? Why are you calling it that? And that's exactly what we're talking about when we're saying unlocking strengths. So then that brings a bit of color to people.
Yeah. I'm in the camp, don't call it a superpower, because I'm like, are you kidding? Like, mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a blessing, sometimes it's like a curse.
Yeah,
because it's so frustrating.
There's so many elements of dyslexia that are incredibly frustrating on a daily basis, and if we pretend it's not true, it's not helping anyone. You know, there are real difficulties that come along with being dyslexic, but learning how to navigate those successfully and build systems to manage them can heavily minimize them and result in you focusing on the things that you're good at, so that you don't feel like you're wading through treacle every single day and when you're working. That's what I think is really important and really valuable. And it's just about working with your brain rather than really trying to do things the hard way around.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like sometimes we can really get caught up as business owners when we see like certain trends going around online. So like for me at the moment, I'm seeing like everyone everywhere like use Notion, and I have tried to use Notion. Notion does not work with my brain. It might work with someone else's brain and they might have like the best time ever, but it's okay not to like jump on that hype and that trend and actually just, you know, find something that actually works for you. And I just feel like when these trends and these hypes come round, it can leave us like feeling like a little bit frustrated or annoyed with ourselves. Have you found that, Natalie, on anything like that?
It's interesting because we use Notion as a business.
Yeah. See, you can use it. And I love how different, like, you know, dyslexia is, because it works for your brain, but it doesn't work for my brain.
Well, to be honest, my employee does Notion. I'm just there for the vibes. I'm not really doing anything in Notion.
You're just there for the group chat.
Yeah. I'm just like ticking off my to-do list that someone else has written. So like, you know, really any technology would work for anyone of that circumstance.
Love that.
But my employee is dyslexic, who is setting up the Notion and is quite obsessed with it. It's interesting you mentioned that, because so we run a membership for you know, adults who are wanting advice and support with dyslexia in the workplace. And one of the questions we had recently is, you know, should I use Notion for dyslexia? You know, I've seen everyone and their dog using it.
Yeah.
And my first reply was, the problem is that people are looking for quick fixes when it comes to dyslexia. They're like, oh yeah, I'll just download this productivity software and away I'll go. And actually, it's not really about Asana, Notion, Monday.com, any of those. It's about understanding what your brain is struggling with and then building the solutions to manage it. And I'm sure any of those would work really well. And there might be specific things that each one has,
yeah,
that really help that. But understanding how you need to set up that project and how you need to manage it is a really important part of using this technology effectively. And just one example that works specifically for me. So alongside dyslexia, I'm in the process of trying to get an ADHD diagnosis, because, I mean, it's just blindingly obvious, to be honest. I feel shocked that it was missed for so long. And one of the things that I always really struggled with productivity software
is it's all well and nice and good having, you know, a productivity software, but the upkeep and the management of keeping it going is so hard for my
ADHD. So hard.
It's so, so hard. And ultimately, no software is going to have like absolutely zero implementation and process and, you know, keeping some level of like the data inputted. And, you know, understanding that that is actually the problem, that's the thing that I really need help and support with, has been really helpful to make sure that we use it effectively. And so, you know, all of my staff have ADHD. And so what we do on our Monday team meeting is, instead of it being half an hour, it's an hour. And we put in our Notion tasks during the meeting. You know, we're chit-chatting as a team and we're putting in the Notion, like, okay, you know, you need to do this. Okay, you need to do that. Okay. If we did it after the meeting, none of us are going to do it. It's not happening. But, you know, a little bit of making it a little bit more fun, providing accountability is super important, and understanding that doing it alone, really, really hard, but doing it with a team, so much easier. And so that's what we do to make us accountable, ensure we're actually using it, ensuring it stays up to date, ensuring it actually gets done. And I just, to kind of put that into a bit of color and an example of, you know, what that feels like, this is what it used to feel like when I, you know, I had to use Salesforce in old jobs, and you know, I had to keep them updated. I used to work in sales, so it was a lot of keeping the CRM updated. And, you know, what would happen is I sit down at my computer and I'd be like, okay, I'm gonna update my Salesforce, and, you know, the ADHD in my brain is like, no, why don't you make a cup of tea first, why don't you have a cup of tea during this session? And I'd be like, okay, I'll go make a cup of tea. You go make a cup of tea. And then your brain is like, okay, cool, like, let's do this presentation. And then brain is like, no, I don't want to. Let's go to the toilet. And you're like, okay, yeah, fair enough. We just have a cup of tea. Let's go to the toilet quickly. And then you go to the toilet. And then you're like, okay, brain, but now it's time to fill in the Salesforce. And you're like, yeah, but I don't want to, and it's hard. And you're like, yeah, I know, brain, I know it's hard. And then you fill it in for like 30 seconds. You've done like one thing. And it's like, well, do you want to go get a snack? Like, you filled in something. Do you want to go get a snack? And you're like, yeah, I'll go get a snack, because I have actually done it. I've done some of it. Great. So I'll go get a snack. And then brain gets into the fridge and it's like, it's wanted a bit of cheese. And now it sees the cheese and it sees the bread. And it's like a cheese toasty. Phenomenal. You go and you make your cheese toasty. And you can tell I work from home. And, you know, you're like 30 minutes in the kitchen making your cheese toast. You get back to your desk. You see an email in your emails. And you're like, oh, exciting. Let me just like write the email. And then you don't fill in the Salesforce. And then you're like, oh, well, the problem is Salesforce. The problem is like, it doesn't work for me. It's too hard. And instead, if you're like, okay, well, as a team, we're going to take 1 hour out of the week and we're going to fill it in together with accountability. And, you know, when you go and make the cup of tea, it's like, hey, don't now go make the go to the toilet and make the sandwich. Like, it's filling in the form time and you're chatting and it's easy. And, you know, other people would be able to sit down for half an hour and fill it in easily. For us as a team, we need a fun team meeting, you know, where we remind people not to go make a cheese toasty. That's yes. Okay, but it yes. gets done and we actually use the software. And that's what I mean as just a really small example of how people can get sucked in by what you were saying of like, every man and his dog is using Notion right now. And yeah, it's really great. And it's helped us keep that visual awareness of what we're doing and what's going on and keeping our objectives. But we know that because of ADHD, it's hard for us to do these rote tasks. And instead of feeling shame and embarrassment, we make it fun. And we do something interesting and we do it in our way and it actually gets done. And that's what understanding your neurodiversity and how to work with it alongside useful technology actually gets shit done.
Yeah, do you know what? You are so right. Of course, you're right, Natalie. And it's not necessarily that, you know, it's Notion itself. It could be the setting up of it. It could be keeping it updated. It could be not knowing all these amazing functions that it can do and understanding how to implement them. Whereas actually, like for me, it's being able to find things really easily. So it literally takes me seconds to like either add a task or to tick something off.
Exactly. It's about really getting specific on what is the challenge that you're going through. Like, the challenge isn't Notion, the challenge is something else. And, you know, what is that? And how can that be resolved? And maybe that can be resolved through a different software. Maybe that's resolved by the way that you implement the software. And it's just about figuring out what the problem really is and then working in a way that's actually makes sense for you. Because filling in a boring CRM system is really hard if you have ADHD. But sitting with your three colleagues and chit-chatting, really easy. You know, and a couple of, you fill in a couple of tasks and, you know, away you are.
Yeah, I love that. Or it's, you know, getting accountability from like your VA or being part of like a co-working session.
Exactly.
Yeah. No yeah. cheese toasty making allowed.
Well, a cheese toasty is fine, just at your lunch hour.
Yes.
Not while you're supposed to be filling in your sales form.
Absolutely. There's a time and a place for cheese toasters, everyone.
Yeah, exactly. That's, it's not really a great surprise I was fired from that job, is it?
I blame the cheese toaster.
No, it was just too delicious. What was I supposed to do?
Yeah, exactly. Natalie, thank you so much for those amazing tips. Is there anything else that you have like a burning desire to share with us when it comes to leaning into our strengths with dyslexia or ADHD?
Gosh, good question. Just to kind of go back onto what we were talking about delegating is, you know, you can delegate a whole task if you want, but you can also delegate the hard parts of a task. So often what we do a lot as a team is we delegate the last 10% of a task. So, you know, I can write the website copy really well, but resizing the images is just too boring for me. Like, I'm going to be making that cheese toasty within no time. And but my other colleagues, like, you know, because they've not spent 3 hours building the website, resizing the images is easy for them. It's no problem. And so often what I end up looking at, particularly with neurodiverse entrepreneurs, is looking at that last 10% and how can we give support in that space and how can we look at things, because there are our own business and because we care so much and because we get so excited by these ideas, it can feel incredibly important to do the entire thing. But actually, sometimes we need to think about, where are we best placed? What should we be doing? What can we do better? And really focus on that.
Yeah, I love that. And I think it's one of the best things that I have done in my business. It's not doing all of the tasks, it's doing some of it myself and then delegating it. So for example, I write all of my like weekly emails to my list. I then hand it off to my VA and then she'll upload it into like the email software, make it look pretty, and then she'll schedule it. If I had to do all of it, it would not go.
Exactly. And you can feel excited and energized by the concepts of the email, but you don't have to do the scheduling and the arranging. And I guess this is an important shout out to Access to Work and how for entrepreneurs you can get support workers to help with a lot of the things that we're talking about. So if you're sitting there thinking like, yeah, nice for you, like, you know, your business has reached a stage where you can hire people, actually you can get government funding to support this, and you can get people that will be able to help you with this through a government grant. So if you're self-employed and you have neurodiversity, I really encourage you to apply for Access to Work, that it will change your life, because it's certainly changed mine.
Yeah, for those of you who are in the UK, I will drop a link below so you can go and check it out. It's quite a simple form to fill in below, along with all of Natalie's links. So you can go and check out her website and also her social media accounts as well. But Natalie, thank you so much for sharing your amazing knowledge and experience with us today.
Thank you. It was so fun.
Yes. And I will catch you all next time for another episode.